Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Let's get started with the weather. Today, oh gosh, a high of 87 and a low of 61. Friday, a high of 93 and a low of 67. Saturday, a high of 92, a low of 68. Sunday, a high of 90, a low of 67. And Monday, a high of 89 and a low of 66. Today, the sun will set at 8:57 p.m. Friday, the sun will rise at 5:50 a.m. and it will set at 8:58 p.m. Looking at our front page now, we can read the mini today. It's by Shirley Frank of Sioux City. She writes, "I must congratulate the two city cemeteries and the one Catholic cemetery that I visited this past weekend. They were perfectly manicured. What is the matter with the other cemetery on Morningside Avenue? The cemetery places and the roads were terrible. I am sure there would be a lot of other people who would agree with me." Our first article is, "Plying the Missouri Again. Co-op officially opens barge terminal near Blencoe," by Caitlin Yamada. The port of Blencoe, which officially opened on Wednesday, has already seen a few barges in and out of that stretch of the Upper Missouri River for the first time in over 15 years. Western Iowa farmers now have access to a lower-cost option to access fertilizer and to export gains at the new gateway to the world market. The new cooperative, constructed at $11 million along the Missouri River near the small Monona County town of Blencoe. The port is the northernmost port on the nearly 760-mile span of the Missouri from St. Louis to Sioux City. Wednesday morning's ribbon cutting welcomed a variety of farmers, politicians, and members of agricultural organizations. Governor Kim Reynolds and Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig, who spoke at the event, praised the future of the barge and its future in international transportation for Iowa farmers. Naig called the Missouri a superhighway to global trade, pointing out the port's slogan, "Gateway to the World Market." Reynolds called the port a historic achievement. "It's a win for farmers, it's a win for Monona County, and it's a win for Iowa," she said. The Republican governor said the port is just the beginning, and it will have a huge impact on the region. She said businesses creating products such as wind blades and dry distiller grains can use the terminal to transport products. The port can load and unload 6 to 9 barges at a time. There have already been 8 barges in and out within the last 6 weeks. New cooperative general manager Dan Dix said, 2 more were expected to arrive Wednesday night. Each barge has the capacity to haul 50,000 bushels of grain. Plying the river with 72 barges per year eliminates the need for 80,000 semi-trailer trucks of grain, Dick said. The port gives the co-op direct access to export markets and provides a third option for transporting grain beyond the current rail and trucks. Because water navigation is more cost-effective than truck or rail, the barge terminal allows the co-op to reduce its freight expenses, Dick said. While Wednesday's festivities marked the formal opening of the port, there are still a few related projects at the terminal to be completed. The Monona County Board of Supervisors successfully applied for a state RISE grant of over $1 million to pave a gravel road from Blencoe, population 224, to the port, which is west of I-29. Dick said the road construction is expected to begin this fall. 2 other future projects include a scale and office facility and a new commodity building. Proponents say barges are good for the environment and vehicular traffic safety because it takes more trucks off crowded highways like I-80, reducing accidents and harmful emissions. With a few exceptions, barges have not traveled as far north as Blencoe in over 15 years. The once thriving barge industry in Sioux City disappeared in the early 2000s after a combination of the degradation of the riverbed, drought, economic recession, low commodity prices, and political infighting over management of the river, and that led shippers to turn to rail and trucks. New Cooperative, which has over 5,500 members and 40 locations throughout western and northwestern Iowa, started planning its rural Monona County port 2 years ago, Dick said. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which manages the Missouri, has assured the co-op it will maintain a 9-foot-deep, 300-foot-wide channel. Federal judge declines to order fireworks at Mount Rushmore. A federal judge on Wednesday rebuffed South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem's efforts to force the National Park Service to grant the state permission to shoot fireworks from Mount Rushmore National Memorial to celebrate Independence Day this year. Noem sued the U.S. Department of Interior in an effort to reverse the decision to deny the state's permit for the pyrotechnic display. The Republican governor successfully pushed last year for a return of the event after a decade-long hiatus, but the National Park Service denied it this year, citing safety concerns and objections from local Native American tribes. The opinion and order from Chief Judge Roberto Lang of the Federal District Court of South Dakota meant that the night sky over Mount Rushmore will be devoid of the state's fireworks on Independence Day this year. Noem has decried the decision to deny the fireworks permit as political and made an argument for holding fireworks at the massive monument. The event last year gave former President Donald Trump an opportunity to make a fiery speech at the monument. The state had signed an agreement with the federal government under Trump to work towards having the firework display this year. However, Noem's lawsuit also reignited legal skirmishing between her and the Cheyenne River Sioux, who opposed the event on the grounds that the Black Hills, which contain Mount Rushmore, are sacred to the Lakota people. In a statement responding to the judge's decision, Noem blamed President Biden's administration for canceling the fireworks, saying it was on completely arbitrary grounds. "But rest assured, this fight is not over," she said, promising to appeal the decision in an effort to restore the event next year. In a 36-page opinion and order, Lang, who was nominated by former President Barack Obama, wrote that he liked the idea of having a fireworks display to celebrate Independence Day, but declined to order the National Park Service to allow it because it would be improper judicial activism for this court to disregard settled law on how federal agencies are allowed to make decisions. Lang wrote, "This country could use a good celebration of its foundational principles of democracy, liberty, and equal protection of the law after a pandemic that has disrupted society and business and has killed nearly 600,000 U.S. citizens to date, after an insurrection and physical incursion of the U.S. Capitol while Congress was convening to certify the outcome of the presidential election, and after this nation has become so sadly divided by the politicization of so many issues, likely to include even the outcome of this case." Board mulls use of relief funds, supervisors consider using money for jail. The Woodbury Board of Supervisors moved closer Tuesday to spending $15.6 million in COVID-19 relief funds on higher-than-anticipated costs for the new law enforcement center. The county may allocate portions of the 2021 and 2022 American Rescue Plan Act funding to fill a gap created by building material inflation. The board took no official action on Tuesday. Guidelines for the use of the federal funding were expanded to include capital improvements designed to mitigate virus spread, as well as provide mental health services, according to an executive summary provided to the board. A new HVAC system 2 medical exam rooms, a mental health office, 3 padded cells, 6 isolation or exam rooms, and program space are a few items described in the board packet that could fit the guidelines. The original estimate for the main phase of the jail construction was $34 million. The low bid of nearly $58.4 million from Houseman Construction of Norfolk represents a 36% increase in cost, said Kenny Schmidt, the County Building Services Director. The impact is directly related to COVID-19, he said, referring to how the disruption of supply chain have led to rising costs for building materials. The funds would be divided into 2 payments, $10 million of the 2021 fiscal recovery funds allocated and $5.576 million of the 2022 fiscal recovery funds. Shane Albrecht of the Baker Group presented a document to the board that was submitted to Senator Chuck Grassley, Representative Randy Feenstra, and Senator Joni Ernst, outlining why the money should be used for this particular project. Sioux City teen pleads guilty to fatal shooting. A Sioux City teenager avoided a potential lifetime in prison for his role in a fatal shooting at a Morningside home, pleading guilty on Wednesday to lesser charges that ensure he'll someday be released from prison. Anthony Bauer, age 18, pled guilty to a reduced charge of second-degree murder and 3 charges of reckless use of a firearm. According to terms of a plea agreement spelled out in court by Woodbury County Attorney Patrick Jennings, Bauer will be sentenced to 50 years in prison and must serve 35 years before he's eligible for parole. Bauer had been charged with first-degree murder, and had he been found guilty at trial, he would have received a mandatory sentence of life in prison without parole. Two of the firearms charges were reduced from felonies to misdemeanors, and a charge of going armed with intent will be dismissed. Bauer had been scheduled to stand trial on July 6th in Woodbury County District Court. Bauer admitted that he and others fired several shots into a house at 2636 Walker Street, where 20 to 25 people were gathered for a New Year's Eve party shortly after midnight on January 1st. Mia Critis, age 18, was struck and killed, and 3 others were injured. In the amended charges filed on Wednesday, Bauer was charged with aiding and abetting in the fatal shooting. Did you knowingly aid and abet another person in the shooting of Mia Critis with a gun? District Judge Zachary Hindman asked Bauer. Yes, sir, Bauer said. In pleading guilty to reckless use of a firearm, Bauer admitted that when he fired shots at the house, the 3 others were injured and the house and a car were damaged. Hindman accepted the plea agreement and Bauer's guilty pleas and scheduled sentencing for July 30th. Bauer's bond was revoked and he will remain in custody prior to sentencing. Jennings said after the hearing that he could not comment on the plea until after sentencing. Defense attorney Matthew Metzger declined to comment. Brothers Christopher Morales, age 20, and Carlos Morales, age 18, both of Sioux City, have pled not guilty of first-degree murder, going armed with intent, and 3 counts of reckless use of a firearm. Christopher Morales' trial is scheduled for July 20th. Carlos Morales' trial is scheduled for August 24th. Christopher and Carlos Morales both remain in custody. Liliana Gutierrez, age 20, of Sioux City, is accused of driving the 3 to and from the house and has pled not guilty of intimidation with a dangerous weapon and 3 counts of reckless use of a firearm. Her trial is scheduled for August 17th. Nebraska officials drop plans for 2-tier Medicaid system. State officials are dropping plans for a 2-tier system to cover voter-approved Medicaid expansion in Nebraska. The Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services announced Tuesday that all Nebraskans covered by the expansion will get a full range of benefits starting October 1st, the Omaha World-Herald reported. The announcement is a change from the earlier plans of Governor Pete Ricketts' administration to offer a 2-tier system that would include a basic plan covering physical and behavioral health care services and a prime plan that would also cover dental, vision, and over-the-counter drugs. The two-tiered system would not have applied to those who receive benefits through the traditional Medicaid program, only those who qualify for the expanded coverage. To qualify for prime coverage, recipients would have been required to meet work or volunteer benchmarks, or participate in educational or job training programs. They also would have had to meet with a healthcare provider for a wellness assessment. Tuesday's announcement means the state will provide the full range of benefits without the additional requirements. The Trump administration had approved Ricketts' two-tier plan last year, prompting a lawsuit by advocacy group Nebraska Appleseed. But President Joe Biden's administration made it clear early this year that it would not approve the system. It's unclear how Tuesday's announcement will affect Nebraska Appleseed's lawsuit, but a hearing in the lawsuit was set for Monday. Voters expanded Medicaid through a 2018 ballot measure, but the state Health and Human Services Department stalled implementation of it for nearly 2 years, the longest delay in the nation among states that have expanded the program. Activists placed the measure on the ballot after years of failed attempts to expand Medicaid in the Republican-dominated legislature and strong opposition from the state's GOP governors. The expansion extends coverage to able-bodied, working-age adults who earn too much to qualify for regular Medicaid, but too little to be eligible for tax credits to help them buy health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. Tyson Foods CEO Banks leaving company, King named successor. Tyson Foods president and CEO Dean Banks is leaving the company for personal reasons, having served less than a year in the top post. Tyson named Banks as CEO in August, but he officially took over the position from Noel White in October. The company said on Wednesday that Donnie King will succeed Banks, effective immediately. Tyson is the largest employer in Metro Sioux City, with more than 4,500 employees at its flagship beef plant in Dakota City, its fresh meats division in Dakota Dunes, and its cold storage facilities in Sioux City. King will have much on his plate at the outset, including contending with worker attendance issues and the ongoing challenges of the coronavirus pandemic. Last month, Tyson announced that it was raising wages to combat absenteeism and worker turnover at its plants as U.S. demand for chicken soars. The Springdale, Arkansas-based company, which processes 20% of U.S. beef, chicken, and pork, has said that absentee rates are around 50% higher than they were before the pandemic. To combat the virus, Tyson began vaccinating workers in February through clinics at more than 100 sites. The company had announced its plans for medical clinics in September. Let's take a look now at some briefs. Man pleads not guilty to sexual abuse. A Lamars, Iowa man has pled not guilty to having a long-term sexual relationship with a girl that began after she turned 13. Rashawn Daly, age 22, entered his written pleas Wednesday in Cherokee County District Court to two counts of third-degree sexual abuse. According to court documents, the girl's mother encouraged her and her brother to befriend Daly in the summer of 2017. Shortly after the girl turned 13, Daly moved into their Marcus home, where he supplied marijuana to all the residents. While executing search warrants at the home in January 2019 and February 2020, officers found marijuana in Daly's bedroom and evidence that he and the girl were sharing the room, court documents said. The girl told authorities she had been in a sexual relationship with Daly from the summer of 2017 until October 2020. The girl said she had told her mother she did not want to be with Daly, but her mother would encourage her to give him another chance and to stay with him, court documents said. Marcus, Iowa police arrested Daly in April. The girl's mother, age 40, who the Journal is not naming in order to protect the victim's identity, is charged with misdemeanor child endangerment and awaits arraignment. West High School Counselor wins state award. A longtime West High School Counselor has been named the Iowa Association for College Admission Counseling Counselor of the Year. Bernie Scolaro, who recently retired after 21 years at West, was lauded by the Iowa ACAC for her outstanding leadership, professional contributions, as well as her role in leading the planning of the annual Tri-State College Fair, which supports college choices opportunities for students from Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota. Scolaro, who had previously worked at Bishop Heelan Catholic High School for 8 years, was nominated for the statewide honor by fellow admission and high school professionals in recognition for her exemplary work with students, specifically in the college admissions field. Although I always hope to make an impact on helping students to be their best versions of themselves, whether that is helping them with college choices, recommendations, financial aid, or social-emotional concerns, they have truly made an impact on me and have helped me become the best version of myself, Scolaro said. Cherokee man sentenced for shooting house. A Cherokee man was sentenced on Friday to 5 years in prison for shooting a house and damaging a car in Larrabee. Joseph Llewellyn, age 30, pled guilty in March in Cherokee County District Court to felon in possession of a firearm and second-degree criminal mischief, charges of carrying weapons, reckless use of a firearm, and second-degree criminal mischief were dismissed as part of a plea agreement. Llewellyn fired 12 to 13 shots from a .22-caliber rifle at the house in the 200 block of Cedar Street in January 1st. Bullet holes were found in the front window and the trim of the front door. A vehicle parked at the residence had puncture holes on the driver's side, a cracked windshield, and a broken headlight. Comedian Bert Kreischer adding second show. Stand-up comic Bert Kreischer has added a second show to his October 17th appearance at the Orpheum Theater, 528 Pierce Street, known for his unique brand of comedy, which interweaves party boy antics with anecdotes of family and fatherhood. Kreischer is adding a 9:30 p.m. Orpheum show in addition to his previously announced 7 p.m. show. Tickets for both performances of the Birdie Boy Relapse Tour will go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday at the Prime Bank box office or at orpheumlive.com. Tickets will also be honored for people who purchased tickets for Kreischer's 2020 Orpheum show, which was canceled due to the COVID pandemic. Mickey Gilley and Johnny Lee coming to Winnevegas, Sloan, Iowa. Country music artists Mickey Gilley and Johnny Lee will be bringing their 40th anniversary Urban Cowboy reunion tour to Winnevegas Casino Resort, 1500 330th Street, on June 11th. Gilley, a country pianist and singer, racked up 16 number one hits, including City Lights and A Room Full of Roses. Known for his easygoing vocal style, Lee was originally a trumpeter and backup singer in Gilley's band. He and Gilley scored a million-selling hit with Lookin' for Love, which became the centerpiece for 1980's Urban Cowboy, a film starring John Travolta and Deborah Winger, which was set in Gilley's real-life nightclub in Pasadena, Texas. Tickets for the Urban Cowboy reunion tour can be purchased at the Winnevegas gift shop or by calling 712-468-9466, extension 7117. South Dakota redistricting to focus on cities and reservations. South Dakota lawmakers tasked with redrawing legislative districts indicated Tuesday they will focus on the state's two largest cities, as well as Native American reservations. Both the House and Senate committees that are redrawing legislative boundaries decided to create subcommittees tasked with gathering input from Sioux Falls, Rapid City, and tribal areas. Lawmakers are readying to receive data from the 2020 census, develop boundary lines for legislative districts, and approve them by December 1st. But the districts in urban areas and Indian reservations could have the most hiccups, according to Matt Frame, a lawyer with the Legislative Research Council that is guiding the redistricting process. Lawmakers must ensure that racial minority groups receive adequate representation in state government in order to stay in compliance with federal law. That could create a challenge in areas where mostly Native American people live, especially because those areas have a greater share of younger people who cannot yet register to vote, and factors like poverty or physical distance can make it more difficult for people to register to vote. The legislative boundaries must be determined on total population, not on voter registration. Kellen returns from Scout. A staff member with the Great Plains Tribal Chairmen's Association called for lawmakers to hold government-to-government consultations with tribes as they draw the new boundaries. He said it was important to avoid splitting reservation boundaries. But lawmakers expressed confusion on how to initiate tribal consultations and where to hold them. Democrat Senator Troy Hinert, who is a member of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, underscored the importance of having the consultations, but acknowledged the process differs by the tribe. Still, O.J. Simmons, co-founder of a Native American voting rights advocacy group called Four Directions that has sued the state in the past, sounded upbeat at the outset of redistricting, noting that the acknowledgement from lawmakers of special consideration for the tribes showed we've come a long, long ways. The state is expecting to receive data from the U.S. Census Bureau in August. That could give lawmakers a tight timeline to propose new maps, host public input meetings, and finalize the new boundaries. The legislature is scheduled to convene on November 8th for a special session to approve the new districts. Republican Senator Jim Boland said after the state received census data, "The process will gear up very intentionally and very rapidly." A Sioux City man was charged May 23rd on suspicion of setting fire to his next-door neighbor's house because they hadn't mowed his lawn as requested. Lee Bowman, age 53, was arrested on charges of first-degree arson and second-degree criminal mischief. He is being held in the Woodbury County Jail on a $20,000 bond. Police and firefighters were called to a home in the 3100 block of 8th Street at 5:57 p.m. on May 23rd. Fire investigators found sticks and plywood propped up against the house and evidence that gas had been used in lighting the fire, which caused an estimated $3,000 in damage to the siding, wall, and interior of the home. Well, everybody, we have reached the halfway point now. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, June 3, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. From Sioux City, James Cook Hamilton, age 79, of Sioux City, passed away Tuesday, June 1st at a local hospital. Mass of Christian burial will be at 1 p.m. Friday at Holy Cross Parish Blessed Sacrament Church with the Reverend Peter Nguyen celebrant. Interment will be in Calvary Cemetery. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday with a rosary at 7:30 p.m. and a chalice service to follow, both presented by Council Number 265, Bishop Garrigan, Assembly Knights of Columbus, at my brother's Colonial Chapel. James was born June 30, 1941, in Independence, Iowa, the son of James D. and Celia Cook Hamilton. He was raised on the family farm in Buchanan County. He attended local schools, beginning in a one-room county schoolhouse in 1946, and later attended public schools in Independence. Following high school graduation, He attended the University of Iowa, where he earned his B.A. in 1963, then his M.A. in 1965, and finally his Ph.D. in 1968, all in British and European history. From 1965 to 1968, he was a graduate teaching assistant for the History Department. On June 16, 1973, he married Paula Mary Statler in Minneapolis. To this union, two children were born. At the time of their marriage, the couple lived in Bemidji, Minnesota, where he worked at Bemidji State University as an associate professor of history. He also was chair of the College Honors Program. In 1974, the family moved to Petersburg, Virginia, where he took a position as director of Residence Educational Center at Chapman College in Fort Lee, with satellite programs in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Montauk Point in Long Island, New York. In 1976, the family moved for a final time to Sioux City. James was director of education at St. Luke's Regional Medical Center. He was associate administrator vice president from 1976 to 1993. From 93 to 97, he was associate director and director of operations of the Health First PPO. He ended his career with St. Luke's as director of operations of Midland's Choice from 97 to 2006. James was a dedicated member of Blessed Sacrament Church. He served as an usher for 27 years. At the young age of 10, James began his lifelong hobby of stamp collecting. His passion for philately was expressed in his wide array of research and publications. He contributed to publications such as American Philatelist, The New Carto Philatelist, and Vatican Notes, where he published over 180 articles on various philatelic topics and served as associate editor beginning in 2009. James also published Captain James Cook's Antarctic Voyages, a series of over a dozen articles in Cook's Log, Journal of Captain Cook Society. He also published over 15 book reviews and served as the editorial assistant for Cook's Log. James presented to many organizations, including the Captain Cook Society, at the annual Great Britain meeting in Yorkshire in 2011. Last year, James published Captain James Cook and the Search for Antarctica, an account that brought together details of Cook's three Antarctic journeys, including the stamps that illustrated the voyages. He presented for the Vatican Philatelic Society at the 60th anniversary in McLean, Virginia, and again at the 65th anniversary in Baltimore. He also presented at meetings of the Omaha Philatelic Society. James was a member of many other organizations, such as the American Association of Philatelic Exhibitors, Order of the St. Benedict at St. John's Abbey in Minnesota, where he served as an oblate, Council Number 11038, Knights of Columbus, and Council Number 265, Bishop Garrigan, Assembly Knights of Columbus, as a faithful purser officer. James generously donated his time to community service. He was a past member of the Noon Sertoma Club. He was director of finance for Art Splash from 1995 to 2006 and on the Institutional Review Board of the June Nyland Cancer Center from 2007 to the present. From Sioux City, Constance Spain, age 98, died Monday, May 31st. Service, June 7th, 10:30 a.m., Holy Cross Parish, Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church. Visitation will be June 6th, 4 to 8 p.m., Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Tucson, Arizona, formerly of Sioux City, Viola M. Johnson. Vi Johnson, age 92, of Tucson, formerly of Sioux City, has passed away after a long illness. A force of nature, smart, strong, independent, opinionated, hard-working, and fun-loving, she was one of a kind. No one was untouched by her big presence. Loved or not, and often both, she could charm you with her infectious laugh. Memorial services will be 9 a.m. Friday, June 11th, at Beautiful Savior Lutheran Church in Tucson, Arizona. the church will be live-streamed on Facebook on the church page. Born in the Great Depression on July 11, 1928 in Mapleton, Iowa, to Alva and Ida Gibbs, she developed her can-do attitude and practical, clever ways. World War II left an indelible influence on her, and she played her part in the war effort, working for Windcharger and then Zenith. Ever patriotic, she loved her country and proudly displayed her flag on holidays and never missed an opportunity to vote. Vi rose from poverty and no high school diploma to become a very successful businesswoman. She began her career in real estate and came to prominence as a mortgage banker, starting as a secretary and rising to break the glass ceiling to become vice president. The original have-it-all woman, she also managed to work in games, concerts, and other events for her 7 children and stepchildren, hem a prom dress, cook dinner every night, host epic family reunions, make amazing treats, throw great birthday parties, and make it look all effortless. Throughout her life, she volunteered in service clubs and the Republican Party, perpetually open to learning new things. She taught computer use to seniors, studied Spanish, taught English, and learned to play the organ. She always embraced modernity, even taking her great love of clothes shopping to the internet. She was resilient, inspiring, sometimes infuriating, and young at heart even at 92. She enjoyed her career, her mother, her 10 brothers and sisters, her grandchildren, hats, Scrabble, romantic movies, brunch, creative projects, creating theme parties, scotch, baking killer brownies and lemon meringue pie, and zinging her children and others mercilessly. She had a fondness for all that glitters and sparkles, gold, diamond sequins, Cadillacs, even gold shoes, and the ever-present gold purse. From Onawa, Iowa, Erica Jo Carrier, age 42, passed away Saturday, May 29th, at her residence. A celebration of life service will be 7 p.m. Friday at Rush Family Chapel in Onawa, with Pastor Michael Lewis officiating. Arrangements are under the direction of Rush Family Care Service in Onawa. Condolences may be left online for the family. Erica Jo was born August 1, 1978 in Fairmont, Minnesota, the daughter of Gary and Dee Dee Martinson Terhark. She attended school through the 6th grade in Elmore, Minnesota. She graduated from North High School in Sioux City. She then went on to the Iowa School of Beauty in Sioux City. Erica and Scott Carrier were married on February 23, 2014. She was a homemaker and loved her 2 boys, Austin and Tyler. She enjoyed going to movies and eating out. Erica loved and cared for her 3 dogs. She loved all music, especially the Beatles. From Mobile, Iowa, Ruth A. Hofstetter, age 94, died Thursday, November 12th. Services, June 5th, 11 a.m., Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home in Mobile. Visitation, June 5th, 10 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. From Rockford, Illinois, formerly of Sioux City, Megan Gail Berger Trilk passed peacefully away on Sunday, May 30th. She was surrounded by her children and husband at the time of her passing. She was an unfortunate and undeserving victim of the COVID pandemic. Funeral Mass will be 10:30 a.m. Thursday, June 3rd at the Holy Family Catholic Church in Rockford, followed by burial in Calvary by Catholic Church. Visitation was held on Wednesday, June 2nd, at Fitzgerald Funeral Home and Crematory in Rockford. Meg was born on May 15, 1965, in Sioux City, to Thomas Nelson Berger and Gail LaRue Swanson Berger. She lived all her childhood years in Sioux City, where she participated in many church activities, as well as enjoying summer days at the Sioux City Boat Club, playing golf and relaxing in the pool. She attended Sioux City North High School, where Meg was active as a cheerleader and gymnast. After 2 years at Briarcliff College in Sioux City, Meg transferred to the University of Iowa, where she earned her degree in 1987. While in Iowa City, Meg met her future husband, Michael Trilk. They had been married 30 years at the time of Meg's death. From Marcus, Iowa, Lorraine Cave. Died Tuesday, June 2nd. Service, June 5th, 10:30 a.m. Peace Lutheran Church in Marcus. Burial, Marcus Amherst Cemetery. Visitation, June 4th, 4 to 7 p.m. and June 5th, prior to the funeral, all at the church. Ernest Johnson Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Sioux City, Bruce Allen Scheid. Died Saturday, May 29th, 2021. Service, June 3rd, 11 a.m., St. Thomas Episcopal Church, followed by military rites. Visitation, June 3rd, 10 to 11 a.m. at the church, Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Sioux City, Carl J. Ribondo, age 88, died Monday, May 31st. Service, June 3rd, 10:30 a.m., Sacred Heart Catholic Church. Entombment, Calvary Cemetery Mausoleum, Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Sioux City, Jerry L. Carver, age 69, died Monday, May 31st. Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. From Remsen, Iowa, Paul Jaminet, age 66, passed away Tuesday, June 1st. Mass of Christian burial will be 10:30 a.m. Friday at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Remsen, with the Reverend William McCarthy officiating. Burial will follow in St. Mary's Cemetery in Remsen. Visitation with family present will be 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, with a parish rosary and vigil prayer service at 5 p.m., all at Fish Funeral Home and Monument in Remsen. Visitation will resume 1 hour prior to the service on Friday at the funeral home. Services have been entrusted to Fish Funeral Home and Monument in Remsen. Paul was born on November 28, 1954, to Ed and Helen Ahrens Jaminet in Lamars, Iowa. He was raised in Remsen and received his education from St. Mary's Catholic School, graduating in May 1973. He then attended Buena Vista University in Storm Lake, graduating in 1977. Paul lived in Remsen and for a short period of time worked at Sioux Valley Savings and Loan, and then for Dan Jaminet Trucking. Paul was a member of St. Mary's Catholic Church and the Buena Vista Alumni Association. His hobbies include golf, motorcycle rides, and he was a baseball fan. Paul was known for his sense of humor. He also was a daily patron of Mrs. B's in Remsen. And that concludes today's obituaries. Turning now to some feature stories in our weekend edition. Postcard presentation at Betty Strong Encounter Center. The Betty Strong Center will host Selling Sioux City Part 2, in which longtime postcard collector Dave Bishop will present a program about Sioux City postcards at 2 p.m. on June 6th. Bishop is a frequent presenter of local postcard history programs at the center. He has covered stories of local transportation, restaurants, advertising, floods, and many more. Long before emails and texts, postcards were the way people shared images and messages. During Bishop's program, he will discuss images used in the 1880s as a form of enticing customers into Sioux City stores. Businesses in Sioux City, especially those from 4th and Pearl to 4th and Jackson, would give out trade cards to customers, and those would soon become collectibles. Here's the Sioux City 6, the best things to do in Siouxland. Number 1. The SUX Pride Festival kicks off at 11 a.m. Saturday at the Convention Center with fun and food for all ages. The All-Star Show with national title holders and more than 30 state title holders takes over at 9 p.m. Events from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. are free to all ages, while events from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. are for the 21 and older crowd with a $10 admission fee. Number 2. A four-person golf scramble begins with a shotgun start at 10 a.m. Saturday at the Covington Links Golf Course in South Sioux City. Prices are $60 per person and $240 per team, which includes 18 holes, a golf cart, and meal. The event is a fundraiser for the Dakota City Fire Department. Call the fire department at 402 987-3326 to sign up. Proceeds go toward the purchase of fire and rescue equipment. Number 3. Have you been missing live music? Sioux City's Noah Towns and the Other Brothers will take the stage at the Marquee on Friday night. The performance begins at 9 p.m. and goes on until 1 a.m. Number 4. Catfish Keith has appeared with legends John Lee Hooker and Ray Charles, and now he's coming to downtown Sioux City. Blues singer and songwriter Catfish Keith will appear at Vanguard Arts on Friday night at 8 p.m. Number 5. You never know what you might find. Singing Hills Secondhand Finds and Furnishings is hosting its first Sunny Sunday swap meet of the season from noon to 4 p.m. on Sunday. The swap meets will be held every Sunday except July 4th through August 29th. And number 6. Attention preschoolers, get a parent, grandparent, or someone else to take you to Sioux City's Dorothy Picot Nature Center at 10 a.m. Tuesday for story time about wiggling worms. The story will be read at the Nature Center's outdoor amphitheater and will be followed by a short hike to the Nature Place Gate. There is a limit of 20 people, and attendees must pre-register by calling 712-258-0838. LNC Interpretive Center launching kids' summer activities. The Sioux City Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center will kick off its Exploration Wednesdays for Kids hands-on learning series this week. No reservation is needed and materials will be free. Explore the themes of animals, river dangers, obstacles on the expedition, and more during 45-minute sessions. Campfire Stories classes at 9:30 a.m. are planned for second graders and younger. Junior Explorers classes at 11 a.m. are designed for third graders and older. Campfire Stories at 9:30 a.m. include Getting to the Root of the Expedition on June 2nd, Listen to a Garden Story and Create a Plant Take-Home Craft, Talons, Claws, and Paws, June 9th. Go on an animal story adventure and be ready to make tracks around the center. Lively River Adventures, June 16th. A story about river life and take a mini fishing trip. On June 23rd, A Race to the Finish, a tale of a race on the frontier followed by an obstacle course race. The Junior Explorers at 11 a.m. programs include on June 2nd, Getting to the Root of the Expedition. Learn more about Captain Meriwether Lewis's green thumb and how to make garden seed bombs. June 9th, Talons, Claws, and Paws. Discover the animals and myths that filled the expedition's journals, then learn to create your own animal tracks. June 16th, Lively River Adventures. Learn about the many river dangers the explorers encountered on the Missouri River, followed by a do-it-yourself river maze. And June 23rd, A Race to the Finish. Try out for the expedition in a themed obstacle course inspired by trail dangers. For more information and to reserve a spot, contact Sarah Olson, the center's education coordinator, at 712-224-5242 or go to the website siouxcitylcic.com. Riding for a Cause. Bike SUX ride on June 5th to help buy presents for children. Bike SUX returns this weekend after a one-year hiatus due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Junie Bonnarts, who has taken part in Bike SUX for the past decade and is looking forward to getting back on the trail for this year's ride. The first time Bonnarts took part in the ride, her bike was a bit too heavy. Heavy bicycles can be sluggish and difficult to pedal. And then it started storming. But she has nothing but good things to say about her experience. We had somebody come and pick us up and bring us back, and we went to Minerva's and had a great meal, and they had a nice little raffle, and it was a great time, said Bonnarts, who was also a part of the Siouxland Cyclists, a local bicycle group. This year's ride, the 11th annual, starts at 9 a.m. Saturday at Caribou Coffee, 2939 Hamilton Boulevard. Registration begins at 8 a.m. Proceeds from the ride benefits the Sioux City Journal's Good Fellow Charities. In recent years, Bonnert's, a dental hygienist, has helped Cynthia and John Donovan organize the ride. The Donovans started Bike SUX in 2009. Cynthia Donovan is a retired classified and digital director for the journal. Each year, Bike SUX raises somewhere in the neighborhood of $13,000 to $18,000 for Goodfellows, the more than century-old tradition that gives Christmas presents to needy children. It's the only major fundraiser this time of year for the Christmas season charity. Ashley Stokely, a Bike SUX board member and a journal advertising specialist, said the ride is expected to attract around 100 cyclists on Saturday, and possibly somewhat more. So far, we've had a lot of very good feedback. A lot of people are really excited to get out on the trails again, and it's just a really fun family event, Stokely said. The ride traditionally ended at Bamboo's, a bar along the Big Sioux River, but the bar is currently closed. Bamboo's, part of the Missouri River Boat Club's clubhouse, had a difficult year after the erosion of the river caused part of the structure to collapse at the beginning of 2020. Fundraising and repairs are ongoing. I think we're planning on having somebody there, like volunteers with water and stuff like that, and raffle tickets, and then they can turn around and go back. Stokely said, although some of the more seasoned riders proceed on their own to the Adams Homestead and Nature Preserve in North Sioux City. Lunch for the riders will be served at One-Eyed Jack's, 3091 Hamilton Boulevard, but riders must arrive by 1:30 p.m. to get the lunch. Bike SUX won't have a poker run this year, but Stokely said there are a lot of really nice raffle items this year, including numerous gift baskets, hotel stays, gift certificates, Wells Enterprises ice cream coupons, and more. Cyclists on the roughly 19-mile round-trip track make a series of optional stops at bars along the route. As Cynthia Donovan put it 9 years ago, you can make it into a drinker's bike party, or you can be very serious about it. It's all up to you. They don't have to stop at the bars, but a lot of people do, Stokely said. Last summer, with Bike SUX, Rag Bri, and other smaller rides called off because of the pandemic, Bonnert's and her bicycling friends did some informal, socially distanced rides on their own. We just kind of made up our own, did our own thing, she said. Bonnert said her favorite part of Bike SUX is comparing bicycles with other riders and comparing the number of miles ridden. It's just a way to get together with a lot of people, she said. So here's the event in short. What? Bike SUX. When? Registration at 8 a.m. Ride begins at 9, Saturday, June 5th. Where? Meet at Caribou Coffee, 2939 Hamilton Boulevard, and helmets are mandatory. Sioux City Pride expands. The Sioux City Pride Festival returns to Sioux City this weekend, and for the first time, the festivities will be extended an extra day. The two-day event kicks off on Friday evening with SUX Pride, Downtown Partners, and Explore Sioux City hosting a give-back night on historic 4th Street. Each business will offer its own specials and attraction. Joe McCauley, executive director of SUX Pride, said the event is designed to give back to the community and to showcase the various attractions and entertainments in the area. Basically, what we are doing is helping people create a custom night on 4th Street, McCauley said. SUX Pride resumes Saturday, starting at 11 a.m. at the Sioux City Convention Center. The activities include vendors' booths, kids' activities, and food trucks. McCauley highlighted this year's outdoor painting activity called Pride Rocks, where kids can pick a rock and paint it any way they want, bring it home with them, and then it could be featured on social media. We're asking those children to take a picture of it, create a story, and submit it to our Facebook page, he said. The festival will also have drag shows every hour and drag story time at 11:30 a.m. It's going to be a really good time, McCauley said. There's lots of stuff to do for everyone of all ages. The events are free and open to all ages until 6 p.m. After that time, the festival will switch to events for those 21 and over, with a $10 admission charge. Among the evening events are drag queen bingo, lip sync battles, and an all-star show with national headliners that begins at 9 p.m. XUX Pride is traditionally held in June, but last year's festival was postponed until August because of the pandemic. McCulley said he is excited to return to the normal schedule this year and continue to expand the event. He expects this year's edition to have the largest turnout ever. It feels great to be back to doing it in June and to actually be able to expand and have our largest one ever, McCulley said. The festival is not only a celebration of pride, it also recognizes the diversity of Sioux City and the great people that live in the area, he said. We really want to encourage people to come out and have a great time, enjoy this festival, and reconnect with people, he said. I think, everybody, we're going to call it for today. That does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of your day.